In today's episode, we are looking at those at the top. World champions crowned in Jon Moxley and Damian Priest, and how long will Damian Priest be a world champion for, as well as a newly anointed or maybe self-anointed tribal chief in Solo Sikoa. We're going to get into all this discussion and more in today's episode of the WrestleManiac UK show. Let's go. What's up, people? It's your boy Mex, the WrestleManiac, if you will, back again with another episode of the WrestleManiac UK show podcast. Hope you're all very well. Thank you for downloading today's episode. It has been a hell of a last week. So busy. Obviously, we all know WrestleMania week is just its own animal, its own beast. I was lucky enough to be out in Philadelphia, went to some great shows in progress. Ring of Honor was good, and NXT was really, really fun. WrestleMania, my God, we all know what WrestleMania was, what turned out, you know, everything that happened, especially in that main event. So good to be present for that show, and had an absolute blast when I was out there in Philadelphia. Thank you to, you know, some of the I met some of you out in Philadelphia, and it was really, really cool. And of course, all the love and support across my channel, across Rest Things channel, where we had our daily vlogs of everything that we were up to in Philadelphia. So if you haven't checked out the daily vlogs and you want to see what we got up to whilst we were out there in Philadelphia, head over to the Rest Things channel, subscribe while you're there. And yeah, the Philadelphia vlogs are all up, as well as other content and stuff that we shot at the time, podcasts, Wale Mania, other events and things that we went to and people we networked with. So yeah, WrestleMania 40 in the books, you know, a new era. That was the slogan being bandied around all weekend. Felt like a new era. So they weren't really just saying it, you know, just for the sake of saying it. It really did feel like this is the beginning of something new. Things have been changing, but this is like, I guess, the moment that they're kind of crowning, like, you know, this is the new start going forward from here. And it was really, really good. Great to have Cody Rhodes, finally, world champion, WWE Undisputed Universal Champion, and it is so deserved, and it was really, really a moment. And of course, he wasn't the only kind of new champion christened at WrestleMania. We saw Sami Zayn christened Intercontinental Champion. Bayley won the Women's Championship, which was good. We saw, you know, two tag teams emerge from that ladder match to become tag team champions as well. And we're going to talk about Damian Priest a bit later in the show and his title run and everything around that. We're also going to talk about Jon Moxley, who has recently become IWGP Heavyweight Champion, which is a first for him. Great work from him. I think it's a great decision by the company. We'll get into it. We will get into it. But yeah, there's a few topics today, like I said, around champions, around coronations, if you want to call it that, which we'll get into, and some stuff around younger stars that I actually want to speak about today. So buckle up, tune in, get your tea and your drinks and your snacks and everything ready. We got a jam-packed episode today. Without further ado, let's get into it. In a terrific segment on this past week's SmackDown, we saw Solo Sikoa rise to the occasion, and in the absence of his tribal chief, Roman Reigns, or at least that's what we think, Solo Sikoa took the reins on as to what has been left behind following, obviously, the big losses at WrestleMania from Jimmy Uso and from Roman Reigns. Solo Sikoa told Paul Heyman, almost in like saying back to Paul Heyman what Paul Heyman said to him, wins and losses matter, losses should be punished. And in a really sinister way, he approached Jimmy Uso, and Jimmy Uso was pretty much saying to him, bro, you can't be talking about me here. You cannot be getting on to me about losing. Solo basically told him, I love you, don't worry about it, and all that kind of stuff. Only to turn his back, and we saw Tama Tonga come through with the black hoodie. Of course, Solo is supplying his brothers with the black hoodie. He comes through. He absolutely nails Jimmy Uso, Tama Tonga, that is. And they proceed to beat down Jimmy Uso. Solo Sikoa proceeds to give Jimmy Uso a whole host of Samoan spikes. Yeah. Like, absolutely smashing this guy's throat with his thumb, which, when you say it like that, doesn't sound so violent, but exactly what he was doing. Smashing his throat with his thumb. And you see Paul Heyman in the corner, like, what is going on here? Who ordered this? And I believe in the ring, they said, this is by orders of the tribal chief. You see a backstage segment later on in the night where Tama Tonga approaches Paul Heyman that's coming out from a, like a locker room area. And again, kind of reminds him, we were doing this as orders from the tribal chief. Now, it's great to see Tama Tonga firstly on WWE. He has been someone that they have been after for a very, very long time. And Tama Tonga obviously recently, earlier this year, walked away from New Japan after being there for absolute yonks. It's just saying he wants to come back to the States where his family are and stuff like that. It's about time. And what we saw here, in my opinion and many others' opinion, is the forming of a brand new bloodline. We are getting Bloodline 2.0. Bloodline Wolfpack, some have called it. Like, we are getting a whole new branch of the Bloodline. And the crazy part is that all of these lot are still Bloodline. They are still family one way or the other. I saw reports, as I record this, of Hikuleo still being someone that WWE are looking at. Hikuleo, if I'm correct, is the brother of Tama Tonga. They are still looking to bring in more people here. And of course, we know that Jacob Fatu, at the very least, has kind of started confirming to people he has signed for WWE. So Jacob Fatu, Tama Tonga, you know, Hikuleo might be soon coming. I don't know his contract situation. We know Tangaloa, who was once in WWE, could quite possibly come back. They've got so much more to tell of this Bloodline story and so many legs and so many people they can still involve. But, you know, Tama Tonga appeared. They told us very, very, you know, straight up, like, Tama Tonga, the son of Haku, the son of Haku, letting us know immediately this guy is Bloodline too. Now, the tribal chief comment by orders of the tribal chief. Who is the tribal chief now? Because after SmackDown, Solo was carrying himself like the new tribal chief. The very kind of sinister stuff you would see Roman Reigns do. Hug, embrace his family, tell them everything's all right. Tell them, I love you, I'm doing this for you, and all that kind of stuff. That was very early tribal chief, if you guys remember. It's particularly between Roman Reigns and Jey Uso. And then all of a sudden, he turns on them. He does something crazy. He can't control himself. Is Solo Sikoa the new tribal chief? Which, to be honest, this segment, this was the best we've seen of Solo, in my opinion, for a very long time. Ever since he beat John Cena at Crown Jewel last year, he's been just the guy that's taking pins and stuff like that. Not been great at all. Don't think he's won a match since then. But this was the most dominant and just putting himself across as a big deal. Almost like how we were introduced to Solo. It's been a long time since we've seen like this iteration of Solo. But is Solo the tribal chief? Or are these guys, Solo Sikoa, Tama Tonga, acting on behalf of a new tribal chief, another tribal chief, a Dwayne Johnson tribal chief, is what I'm trying to get at. Like, is The Rock the new tribal chief? And this is the splinter group of the Bloodline, another Bloodline, like I said earlier. It's very interesting to see, as of Monday Night Raw last week, when we saw The Rock approach Cody Rhodes, there was no mention of Roman Reigns. Roman Reigns has lost. Cody has the title. Cool. The Rock came out and The Rock said, yeah, that's all that happened. You got the win. You got the best of us, etc., etc. But then The Rock entered the fray, you know, saying that, you know, I want to see your title. I want to hold your title. Ooh, the title looks good on me. I would love to hold this title and all this kind of stuff. And basically, you know, creating a feud with Cody Rhodes without knowing when it's going to be, and obviously we know the Rock is stepping away for a minute now. Like, this could be The Rock throwing his name into the hat as the new tribal chief, or just as the final boss, a leader of a, you know, the whole, like I say, Bloodline spin-off, and he has Solo as his right-hand man, Tama Tonga, you know, who is now arrived, Jacob Fatu, which sounds like he will be on TV and involved fairly soon. This could be Bloodline 2.0 under the tutelage, the guidance, these are the employees of the final boss, if you like. And then what does that make of the original Bloodline? Obviously, Roman's off TV now. He's in a process of rebuilding himself. Jimmy Uso, who probably got kicked out of the Bloodline with that beatdown that we saw. Jey Uso, who is, you know, he's got a world championship match against Damian Priest, but let's be honest, he's not going to beat Damian Priest, I don't think. So where does it leave these guys? A lot of people, again, we've talked about Jimmy and Jey reigniting their love for each other as brothers, as a tag team coming back together, maybe joining Roman Reigns, and they all rekindle. And this is like the good guy Bloodline now. And then we bring in one more person, the honorary Oos, Sami Zayn, to fight this battle 4-on-4, you know, kind of traditional Bloodline, Roman, Usos, Sami Zayn, against this new shape Bloodline, The Rock, Jacob Fatu, Tama Tonga, and Solo Sikoa. I mean, it sounds fun to me. Of course, as well, people will start predicting War Games, that is, you know, all the way down in November, will come around very soon. Personally, I can't see The Rock in a War Games match. I just think with him, his schedule, this, that, and the other, there might be a lot that could go wrong if he's in such a, like, violent match, if you see what I mean. But who knows? He's been very dedicated so far, so you could see him in there. And of course, WWE violence isn't, like, really, really violent. So it's possible, but I can't see it at this juncture. But what we are building to here is a new tribal chief, whether it be Solo or The Rock. I think we are getting, you know, this two bloodlines, if you like, a bloodline civil war. We're getting The Rock versus Cody Rhodes. And of course, the entire bloodline civil war and two bloodlines and stuff will eventually lead to a Roman Reigns versus The Rock, probably at a WrestleMania, because that match is too big now to happen anywhere else. Let's call a spade a spade. So yeah, there's a lot happening here, a lot of good stuff. Solo Sikoa, the new tribal chief, not while the final boss is around, I would think. At WrestleMania, we saw the heist of the century cash-in imitated by Damian Priest. I'm still quite sour about that. Those that know and have been listening to me for a minute, you would know that I didn't want Damian Priest to cash in the Seth Rollins-esque style. I think Seth Rollins cashing is the greatest cashing of all time. And it was different in the sense that Damian Priest didn't join the world title match. He cashed in after. I was actually quite happy and surprised. And, you know, the occasion takes you when Damian Priest cashes in. I thought it was a really good cash in, and Drew McIntyre done some good work in that cash in as well. So Damian Priest is now the world heavyweight champion, which I think is necessary as well, because although that, yes, currently he's not as hot as when he won the briefcase, I think that Money in the Bank as a concept was dwindling, and we needed somebody to have a successful cash-in, especially on the men's side, because, like I said, yeah, it's just been a bit funny for some years, and it needed to look good. It needed to come off big again, which it did at WrestleMania, and it needed to be in the hands of someone that, okay, he's not quite there now as a world champion, but this is the secondary world title, and he can be molded into something and someone quite important. Seth Rollins done some great work with that championship, and now Damian Priest, he has to carry the torch and go forth, and he's already said he wants to continue the good work that Rollins done. He wants to be defending a title and all of that kind of stuff. And of course, he's got the Judgment Day as an infrastructure around him. I think we could be in for something really, really fun and really well kind of character led, you know, Judgment Day getting involved, ensuring he keeps the title. Obviously, I think him and Rhea Ripley are already calling each other twins in terms of their twinning with their two world title, men's world title and women's world title. So I think this could be something really, really good for him, and I'm happy that he won it. But how long is Damian Priest going to be world champion? Because we have to look at the lay of the land. The lay of the land says that there are still a lot of names, a lot of competitors in and around this title. I mean, just to reel some off, there is Drew McIntyre that he cashed in on. Drew McIntyre is not going to go away. He's going to be, you know, occupied with some things here and there, CM Punk namely being one of them, but I don't think Drew McIntyre is going to go away. One. Two, Seth Rollins. He will probably want some, you know, say in what happens with his title. So this is the title he kind of held for 300 days, just over 300 days. So he probably isn't quite done with it, even though he lost it. You're going to have a Gunther, I think. Gunther's recently dropped the IC title. You've got Bash in Berlin coming up, and we'll talk about that in a second. But I think his name is going to be around the situation. CM Punk, I think his name is going to be around the situation as well. As he gets well and more fit, gets back into the fray, I think Drew will be his immediate, you know, head-to-head with Drew McIntyre. But he will be in and around it. And then, of course, we have a draft in a matter of weeks. So probably one or two other names could enter this fray that I haven't even mentioned at this point. So yeah, I can't see that this is going to be a long title reign just because of the amount of names that we've had around it, especially on WWE programming. We've had Seth Rollins with like nearly a year long reign. We've had Roman Reigns with maybe, you know, 3 years reigning, 1,000 odd days, you know, it's absolutely crazy. So I don't think we're going to go back to a long reign here again. I think Damian Priest probably holds this title till maybe about June at the longest. And I say June specifically because we have Clash at the Castle in Glasgow, Scotland. Yeah. Drew McIntyre will surely be nailed on to have a world title match at Glasgow, Scotland, at Clash of the Castle, and more than likely become world heavyweight champion in front of his people. He's done it in front of the crowd now at WrestleMania, which he was deprived of, cashed in on immediately. I think this will be the proper, right, Drew's going to win it here at Clash, and then we go from there. And that's, of course, as long as they secure a new contract with him, because there's talks that Drew hasn't signed a new contract, which is crazy to me. I don't believe that, but we shall see. So at the very longest, I think Damian Priest, maybe till June, which gives him, what, the best part of 2 to 3 months as champion, which I don't think is a bad thing. If you jam pack those 2 to 3 months with title defenses on TV and other pay-per-views, other shows and stuff like that, I think it could be okay. I think he could be absolutely fine. He won't like come off looking bad or anything like that. I think, you know, sometimes the world champion, especially this not being like the marquee title, this is like the secondary world title, it doesn't necessarily matter if it's flipped around or flipped between guys too often. We expected that with Rollins. We were kind of told we would get that with Rollins, and then that wasn't the case. Now they kind of backtracked and said Rollins needed to establish the title. Cool, fair, whatever. But we now don't need another whole year-long reign, in my opinion. Damian Priest, give him some months down to June where, I mean, if it's going well, I might go past June. I might go to Bash at Berlin or SummerSlam, which is August. But it just seems that, you know, June would be quite fitting to have Drew McIntyre win that title in front of his people in Scotland, his actual people, not, you know, when they gave us Clash of the Castle in Wales and tried to trick us into Drew winning in front of the Welsh fans. He's not Welsh, is he? So I think this could be the place where Damian Priest drops the title. But you guys let me know if you think it's going to be a longer reign or if he's going to drop it before then, let me know as well. And we can compare it and see what we think. But yeah, I just kind of plotted it out that Clash at the Castle is going to be versus Drew, and Drew might win it there. And then the Berlin might be the likes of Gunther stepping up against McIntyre, and then you might see SummerSlam where it could be Drew McIntyre versus CM Punk for the world title, because spoiler, I don't think Gunther will beat Drew McIntyre in Berlin. If he gets a world title match, I think they're gonna literally do what they did at Clash of the Castle, make us think Gunther's gonna win it, and it's not gonna happen. So I think that's the kind of timeline we're looking at. But I'm looking forward to Damian Priest. Damian Priest seems that, you know, this means the absolute world to him from all the content that they've put out over the past week and stuff. I'm absolutely chuffed for him that he is the world champion. Will he hold it for long, 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 long? I don't think so. I think we're looking at 2 to 3 months best, and then we move it along to somebody new and go from there. It's been a very interesting few weeks for Jungle Boy Jack Perry, or just Jack Perry as he's going by these days. He has been embroiled in all kinds of drama, which I'm sure he probably thought he left behind 8-9 months ago, but the company he works for, All Elite Wrestling, they have chosen to bring it back to the forefront, airing footage of the actual scenario that happened at All In London, Wembley Stadium, all of those months ago, where he was attacked by CM Punk, and obviously CM Punk has since been fired, turned up at WWE, and Jungle Boy was suspended. Looks like he was sent to New Japan as maybe part of his suspension or part of his rehabilitation, who knows. And it looks for me that Jack Perry is set to return to AEW imminently. It seems like the reason they chose to air the footage is to help kind of bring him back into AEW amongst this storyline that the Young Bucks are having with FTR. And I will not be surprised if Jack Perry, the scapegoat, joins the Young Bucks and this new elite faction that they are building. Now, Jack Perry, I think he may have been overpunished, especially the way it's come out that the whole situation was dealt with, that Tony didn't speak to him for so long and this, that, and the other. I just think that's nonsense. Like, he was clearly wrong in running his mouth and all of that kind of stuff. At the same time, I feel like his punishment hasn't fit the crime at all. However, he's gone over to New Japan. He's actually dealt with this situation pretty well, in my opinion. He's been booked relatively well in New Japan, but most importantly, I think he's done a lot of good character work, embracing this heel character, getting over more so as a bad boy, as a heel, and I think it's really worked for him. Now, my question here today is that we've seen the whole Four Pillars thing often being, you know, thrown into disrepute. I think when Four Pillars was first said amongst those young guys in AEW, everyone kind of believed it and said, yeah, these are like the four guys that this company's kind of going to stand on and going to grow through, your Darby Allins, MJF, Sammy Guevara, and of course, Jack Perry. Is Jack Perry still a pillar to AEW? That is my question. I don't really know the answer to this sort of thing. I feel like ever since that comment was made, AEW has moved on a lot. Like, it has kind of really acquired a different level of stars. I mean, if we're talking about actual pillars that hold up AEW, that, you know, are kind of heart and soul kind of characters for AEW, immediately Mox is my go-to. I think Moxley is brilliant. And, you know, there's other guys that have become that for AEW. I would say a Danielson, that's someone that they acquired, you know, and wasn't there from day one, has really become a cornerstone of that company. I would probably say MJF is still, amongst the four of them, a cornerstone for me. Darby Allin somewhat as well, but the likes of a Sammy Guevara, the likes of a Jack Perry, a pillar for AEW, I think, you know, if let's say they were to move on to elsewhere, to pastures new, AEW would still stand. So the pillar comment, I don't know. But I know the whole pillar comment anyway was said in kind of tongue in cheek, and that these are just the four guys coming through. But in terms of holding up the company, I don't see it. But Jack Perry, for me, still has a lot to prove. you know, the Japanese fans, especially after the past weekend with the Windy City Riot pay-per-view that New Japan put on and the reaction to everything, and that was in Chicago, those fans kind of ate it up and he looked really good. It's now, can he come back to week TV and really prove his worth and his mettle? And, you know, AEW have stood by him here if this whole situation has gone on. And like I said, I think he's been overpunished, but they've stood by him here and it's almost now time to repay the faith, sort of thing. I find it very hard to see him kind of go elsewhere. Indies, you could probably make a really good living on the Indies and New Japan and stuff like that. But yeah, I don't see maybe WWE acquiring him, especially while CM Punk is, you know, such a prominent figure over there right now. So AEW has to be where it works for him. I think there was a drop off following the whole Jungle Boy character, but we knew it was going to take some time for him to become a heel from such a beloved character with Jungle Boy. Now he's actually had some adversity, some edge happen to him with this entire story around CM Punk and stuff. The way he's kind of encapsulated it and taken it on board and everything, I feel is working. I won't say has worked because there needs to be some fruits of the labor of what he's doing. So I'll definitely say it's working. Like, he hasn't run into a little cave and hidden because of everything that's been said, sort of thing. So I think he's taken it on pretty well. Just don't think that he is so integral anymore. And this isn't really just a Jack Perry thing. I'd say, like I said, Sammy Guevara, I don't think is that integral to AEW anymore. And so, some would argue that maybe Darby Allin and MJF aren't either. And, you know, let me know your opinions, because Jack Perry, I think, now has shown, right, he can go out, he can get the heel heat, he can manage the heel heat. How is he now going to be taken on the inside when he returns to AEW? Which, like I said, I think is imminent. I think we've got a ladder match at AEW Dynasty, which will be hotly contested against the Young Bucks and FTR. And I think Jack Perry is going to be the deciding factor. I think he comes in, he costs FTR, he helps the Bucks win those tag team championships. And then they go under his, he goes under their learning tree from there. So maybe the Bucks are going to be a key part in making him a pillar or making him more important. He is one of their own in terms of a young boy from California. Many have said that's the reason that they brought him in, or, you know, they are looking after their own, their locals. So I expect them now to kind of prop up Jack Perry from here on out. They've been very vocal and taken the side of Jack Perry in this whole affair. Is Jack Perry still a pillar for AEW? Not right now. I think the next couple months, though, will be very telling to see how he kind of adapts to life in this new AEW, where largely TV has been really good over the past calendar year. In terms of 2024, it's been really, really good. But there are so many big names there now that, you know, it's going to be very important that Jack Perry doesn't get lost in the shuffle. A news report from Fightful came out earlier this week that Hook is looking to explore free agency when his AEW contract expires in 2024. Now, this has been something that's been said for maybe the past year now, that obviously Hook's contract was coming up. People were saying that Hook should go straight to NXT. How would Hook fare in NXT? Which I guess is the, you know, next best stomping ground if you're leaving AEW, sort of thing. So what's all we're going to talk about today? Hook. Is Hook in the right place for his development? And me, personally, I'm pretty much in the camp that Hook should leave AEW for WWE. Now, we saw Hook very early on in AEW, not speaking. His character was very cool when he first came out. You know, eventually he was hanging around with Team Taz. That's his dad's faction. Taz, Hall of Famer, will be, you know. Taz is absolutely brilliant. And he wasn't really given much to do. The cool factor, the aura was all around Hook at the time. And he eventually became FTW champion. The faction disbanded. He's been out on his own since then. He had a bit of an undefeated streak as well. Recently had a world title match earlier this year against Samoa Joe, which was really, really fun. But is Hook growing as a competitor? Is he getting better? Is his promos getting better? Is his character being developed and all of that kind of stuff? And you could argue, yes, maybe slowly. But for someone that's maybe been on TV for the best part of, let's call it about 3 years, maybe at least now, has he made a lot of distance in his growth as a professional wrestler? Probably not. And I'm not sure, and this isn't a slant on the company, it's AEW's focus right now to, you know, really produce that next generation. I think a lot of the people right now in AEW are there because they were, you know, great servants on the indies and have worked for the bigger companies and now are coming for a bit of a more shine, more money, things of that nature. And they're going to build their company around those particular names. Remember, AEW themselves are what, 5 years old? So it's like, do you get things right now with your top guys to sustain and maintain your company? Or do you want to start kind of developing the youngsters from now? I'm sure developing the youngsters isn't on the top of their list of priorities right now. So this is one of the reasons I think that Hook should go elsewhere. Now, I think the term exploring free agency is an interesting one. There are places that Hook can go other than WWE. Of course, you've got TNA that are clearly investing right now in a lot of talent. I would say a lot of young talent as well. So that could be good for Hook to go over to TNA. And of course, Taz has previous ties with TNA as well. Hook in a New Japan, I think, could really be a good option as well. Now, obviously, that is a partner with AEW. So how they would choose to manage his contract between the two companies could be very, very interesting. But I think Hook stylistically could work in New Japan and could be a very kind of left field but interesting option. I'd actually argue that that could be a better option for him than going to TNA. But for me, and the conversation will be, if he is leaving AEW, does he go to WWE? Does he go to WWE NXT? And I would say yes, solely on the fact that ever since they have redeveloped NXT, reemerged it in the light of what NXT really should be, developmental and turning, you know, these young stars into tomorrow superstars, I think they have done a cracking job. I think NXT right now is just, it's a factory, just absolutely producing and spitting out these talents that are ready, and a really strong transition is being made from NXT to the main roster at this point. You know, we're seeing the likes of Bron Breakker, a Carmelo Hayes, Obafemi. Some of these names are just really, really shining right now. And, you know, even on the women's side of things, there's an abundance of names, a Roxanne Perez, a Tiffany Stratton, Lyra Valkyria, who's recently just lost her women's title, but she's done some really good stuff as well. Like, I just think that NXT are just nailing it right now with giving all of these people TV time. And even how they manage to do that in just the 2 hours they have every week is crazy to me. Given all of these people TV time, giving them a good showcase, you could see literally week on week, these men and women are improving. And as well as NXT being a good option just from the developmental aspect, you know, we've got the TV aspect that is still there. It's still being shot as a TV show. They are going to, I guess, what is a proper TV channel in CW later on this year. So again, I would think just from a perspective of they need guys that have been on TV, have that TV experience, and that can work as, you know, at least a little bit of a draw. I'm not saying that Hook is going to be pulling in, you know, hundreds and thousands of people every week, but Hook is someone that people will want to go over there and check out. Like, oh yeah, I remember Hook from AEW and stuff like that. Let's see how he's getting on. So I think just, you know, less so for the TV reasons, more so for the developmental ability and opportunity, I would think that WWE is the best option. And if he wants something where I think he can go and be propped up a bit more in terms of, if you like, somewhere between an NXT and a WWE main roster, I think New Japan is your place. I think stylistically, he could go to New Japan and be really, really good off the bat. I'm still not sure what that would do for his character. And that's why for me, WWE is the best place that can mesh the character work along with the in-ring ability. But it's very, very interesting for me that this is even a thing, because obviously we know who his dad is, Taz. And, you know, as long as this isn't just some fake story that the dirt sheets are running with, it's very interesting that, you know, you'd think that Taz has some type of counsel within decisions that Hook will make for his wrestling career. Taz was a fantastic wrestler in his time. It's interesting that they think that, you know, this could be the better option, leaving AEW. And I do think for a lot of young talents, leaving AEW really should be an option. You know, unless they are, there is young and there's young, right? Like MJF is young, but I think he's really good in AEW and he works for AEW. He's not developing still. So maybe that's the word we should be using here. People that still need to develop. I watched Ring of Honor, Supercard of Honor. I was lucky enough to be in attendance. I saw Carl Fletcher versus Lee Johnson. Lee Johnson is terrific. Lee Johnson is great. But is AEW Ring of Honor the place for him to be learning and honing his craft? I'm not so sure. Ring of Honor, I know he's been on a bit of a tear before his loss on that pay-per-view. He had won quite a few matches back-to-back. But is it just matches? Is he developing as a wrestler? Do you see what I mean? So even the likes of Lee Johnson, I would say, when your contract ends, because, I mean, Hook's on TV at least. Ring of Honor isn't quite TV. So maybe Lee Johnson should be looking to move on to somewhere like NXT and let that place really mold him and make him realize his potential. You can see what it's doing for others. You could definitely see what he's doing for others. And this is why I can't help but think whether WWE is in the consideration for if Hook is to leave, where he's going to end up. I think that it really should be, because NXT right now is doing exactly what it says on the tin. Developing stars of tomorrow. And Hook may not need that long in NXT, you know, with the background he's got, with his past training, who his father is and stuff like that. It could be just a quick stint and then up to main roster potentially. Even if it's not, I think NXT would be a lot more productive for him than being on AEW with the FTW Championship, which, let's be honest, doesn't really mean anything. And, you know, doing this fake mentorship stuff with Jericho. His dad is Taz. Like, let's not. We don't need this. So, yeah, for me, Hook should leave AEW just because he's a young star. He needs more matches. He needs more exposure. He needs to learn stylistically, explore his character a bit more. The question is, where would he leave for? Would it be a New Japan? Would it be a TNA? Or would it be a WWE? Let's talk about Jon Moxley. Jon Moxley hasn't been on AEW TV much in 2024, but my God, has he still been busy. This past week, he beat Naito, IWGP Heavyweight Championship on the line. He is now the new IWGP Heavyweight Champion. And it makes so much sense. He absolutely deserves it. He is somebody that went to New Japan when he left WWE initially. And even then, he wasn't kind of just given everything. He had some losses early in his New Japan career. And of course, then AEW came to fruition. He joined AEW. He has been very active in the whole Forbidden Door situation, gone back and forth from Japan, their New Japan's American shows as well, and been doing AEW stuff as well as other indies and stuff. Jon Moxley absolutely loves it. And to see him be crowned IWGP Heavyweight Champion at this time, I think is so necessary. New Japan are in a terrible condition. I'll put it like that. Because they haven't prepared themselves for the losses of an Osprey, for the losses of an Okada. They've let it happen when they've known it's going to happen. They have got great young stars coming through, but they haven't pushed them at a speed and rapidly enough to kind of make them ready for carrying the company in the heavyweight title division. They've obviously removed titles such as the Intercontinental title. They've done a whole thing around the US title and the UK title, and now it's the global title. And they've really messed up their pipeline system, their developmental of the next stars coming through. And then they have names that they just clearly don't want to touch for some reason or the other. Sonata, well, I understand that that just failed. It didn't really seem to work. They tried to kind of bestow this title on somebody else. It didn't seem to work with Sonata. In my opinion, a couple years too late. We've seen the evil experiment and I don't want to see it again. And they were beginning to run out of options. Shingo, for me, will forever be an option, but for New Japan, I don't know why, it's just not an option. So they've had to look further afield. They've had to look outside of their company, and they've landed on the doorstep of Mr. Reliable, John Moxley. He's not just Mr. Reliable for them at this point. He has been Mr. Reliable for AEW over the years. He's a three-time AEW champion, and probably once, or at least maybe one or two of those times is because of the likes of a certain CM Punk's body not being able to hold up, or disciplinary reasons, and Moxley has had to step in. And Moxley absolutely deserves to be hailed as the ace of professional wrestling right now. Like, this is fantastic from him, and this is what he wants. He wants the freedom to be going anywhere and winning titles and, you know, just being a bloody mess at times. And I just think that Moxley is living his absolute best life, winning titles, winning world titles, whether it be AEW or New Japan. And he is just so great, so reliable, puts on a great match, very entertaining. And you just need these reliable people within your company, and he's become that for AEW. And almost like New Japan have knocked on AEW's door and said, like, I know you've got a little Mr. Reliable over there, can we use him right now in this tough time that we're going through? I'm so pleased for him. I'm really pleased for him. I'm happy New Japan made the right choice. I know that there are some New Japan diehards that aren't happy with this, and they're questioning his commitment to New Japan. Well, he has come out and said he is committed to this. Like, I think he's even got some like extended time off AEW programming so that he can make New Japan events and things of that nature. So I'm very sure he's going to do a great job. And again, this is probably be a separate video, but just him, Roman Reigns, The Shield, as a three, as a faction, and what that faction has produced for wrestling and the landscape of wrestling without these guys. We've just seen Roman come off an incredible reign as a world champion. We've just seen Rollins establish a whole new world championship. And Moxley is now the first ever man to win the WWE Championship, the AEW World Heavyweight Championship, and the IWGP World Heavyweight Championship as well. Legacy, like absolute legacy that John Moxley's building. He is so good. He is brilliant. I think it was last year he signed a new AEW contract where he signed for 5 years, I think it was, and said that he wants like coaching responsibilities as well because he wants to nurture that next generation. Listen, I don't know how much longer John Moxley has got in the tank, how much longer he plans to do this, but he's absolutely fantastic, and I'm sure now he will help New Japan to steady this ship. Rocky waters they're going over, and it's on them. They left their map at home and they chose to go the long way around through the rocky water. There's a lot of bad decisions that have led to this point with New Japan. Like I said, you know, over the rainbow, they've got a lot of young talents that are going to come through that are unfortunately just maybe 1 to 2 years away from holding a position like this. But Mr. Reliable, John Moxley, comes in again and he's going to save the situation here. He's going to make New Japan, I guess, somewhat desirable again for people to watch and take in as a product. And he is just absolutely fantastic. It's weird to think of what wrestling could look like without a John Moxley. You know, New Japan would definitely be in trouble right now because Naito only won that title in January and people are beginning to already lose interest. In AEW, he has like been a cornerstone, like I said. He's been a multiple-time AEW world champion. He's been an international champion for AEW as well. And then WWE, he was the leader of, you know, what is probably one of the greatest factions ever now of the Shield. So without his guidance to, you know, those younger guys in Seth Rollins, especially Roman Reigns and where he was in his career, like, it's crazy to think what the landscape of wrestling could look like without the Shield, without a John Moxley especially. So yeah, John Moxley absolutely deserves his flowers. And, you know, there's a lot of things that I've pulled up here as to, you know, his the key bits of his career and what he's done. Let me know what your favorite John Moxley moments are. And if you believe that he is the ace of professional wrestling. As we get ready to kind of land this podcast and, you know, me put it together, get it ready for you guys to enjoy over the next week. A couple things I just want to give like a honorable mention to, or just a mention. they might have not kind of materialized yet, but I will just mention them. Bianca Belair, Jade Cargill. My God, put the title on those women right now. Give those women the tag team titles. They just look incredible together. And believe you me, I love the Kabuki Warriors. But I think as a whole, this division is just not taken seriously enough. And, you know, we've recently seen an NXT women's mid-card title be made in the shape of a North American title. This tag team stuff should be like the mid-card stuff for the main roster, but the women are just kind of shafted and not really treated the greatest when it comes to this title belt. So the hope is you put it on Jade Cargill, you put it on Bianca Belair, and they can give it more shine. But yeah, they just look amazing together. So yeah, let's do that. It makes sense in my head. We have a draft coming up, which I believe I mentioned earlier in the podcast. Very intriguing, very interested to see where names land. I think Cody Rhodes will be on Raw with the Undisputed WWE Championship. I think that Damian Priest goes over to SmackDown with his world title and subsequently maybe the rest of Judgment Day, which will then by default switch Bayley onto Raw as well. Yeah, there's a lot happening. You know, we've got the possibility of call-ups. I think it's inevitable in the next week or next 2 weeks, Ilya Dragunov drops the NXT title to Trick Williams and he then gets called up, because the stipulation of that match is if Ilya Dragunov wins, then Trick Williams leaves WWE as a whole. I'm pretty sure not even just NXT, it was WWE. So you just makes you think that Trick is probably winning that match and then Dragunov gets called up. There's been a lot of talk around Dragunov being called up as well, and he will be an absolutely fantastic addition to the main roster. So I have no problem with that. Roxanne Perez, she threw her own name into the hat on NXT TV saying that, you know, she will be in the draft. So be very interesting to see what she does, especially being the NXT Women's Champion as well. So yeah, a couple of things to look forward to over the next week. We've got Sami Zayn defending the IC title against Chad Gable in Montreal. That's going to be a flipping ruckus. And then this might be the spot. I've been saying it for some weeks now, guys. This may be the spot where Chad Gable turns on Sami Zayn. We shall see. And then, of course, on the other side across the road at the noisy neighbors, AEW, we've got AEW Dynasty coming up, and that should be a banger. On paper, the matchups on that pay-per-view just look incredible. Bar Adam Copeland, Eddie Kingston, Mark Briscoe against House of Black. I don't even, like, I've been watching TV every week. I don't know how we got here. I seriously don't know how we got to this match. And it's whatever, innit? Like, we'll have the match and we'll see how that goes and stuff like that. But, yeah, that pay-per-view, other than that match, on paper, pay-per-view looks incredible. Probably the crowning of a new AEW World Champion in Swerve Strickland. Probably the crowning of a new AEW Women's TBS Champion in Willow Nightingale. So, yeah, there's a lot of stuff over there I'm excited in seeing. Okada versus Pac. Will Ospreay versus Bryan Danielson. Yeah, stupid matchups. Absolutely going to be crazy. I can't wait to see it. We'll probably get some type of review for that done on this show, whether it's on the podcast version or if it's going to be on the YouTube channel, WrestleManiac UK. We'll probably get something done to just talk about Dynasty, because like I say, on paper, it looks like a madness. So that's all what's coming up in the next week, and I can't wait for it, man. I'm looking forward to it. But yeah, like I said, bring this thing into land, boys and girls. That is it. Let me work on this podcast and get it out for you so that everything I've said is timely and it's not like, you know, days and days later. So yeah, I appreciate you guys for tuning in for the WrestleManiac UK show this week. Again, every Monday, you can download this podcast. Share it, let me know your thoughts of it. Catch me on X, WrestleManiac UK. Catch me on Instagram, WrestleManiac.UK, and we can talk about it. Look forward to putting out another episode for you guys next week, but that's all for now. WrestleManiac UK signing out, and I'll see you soon.